Hello, everybody, and welcome into the Apples and Genos Fantasy Hockey Podcast. My name is Nate Grootnibblink. I'm the creator of Apples and Genos, originator of the Zero-G Draft Strategy, and in this podcast, Blake and I are going to talk about the biggest hotshots and have-nots of the last couple of weeks. Let's get it. And of course, I have your friend and my best friend, the man on whom you can depend when you are in a downtrend. Blake, how are we feeling tonight?
Oh, God. Well, how would you even know? You're never in a downtrend, buddy. You're always just reaching for the stars. So, yeah, but I appreciate the kind words. That's nice, Nate. I'm feeling very well. Buddy, this week in fantasy, oh, God. I mean, I talked a little bit about this on Friday, but this is the type of week that keeps you coming back for more, right? This is like when you go out on the golf course and you hit like that beautiful, like 260-yard drive off the tee. You're like, yeah, I can do that again. No problem. That'll keep you golfing for the next 5 years. So yeah, this week here in fantasy, I'm crushing my matchups and it feels amazing after last week's debacle. So I'm stoked. But yeah, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. 50-50 in my leagues right now. I'm in a fight to the end with Raj. Actually, I'm watching the Ducks Preds game that's going on pretty closely. I need like one more point from Yossi and then I can beat Raj in that matchup. That's in the keeper league, and I've already sold most of everything except for like Yossi and my other kind of guys that I'm earmarked for keepers for next year. But I'm still trying to stay competitive. Yep. And take down my friends, right? That's what it's all
such,
about at the
such
end
a
of
troll
the day.
Nate, that's just elite level trolling right there. Nate is still at 12 o'clock midnight or 3 a.m. whatever, he's still out there picking up all the best streamers. He's out of the playoffs. What the hell's going on? But that's what I like about you, Nate. All right.
Yeah, well, in that league, actually, it does matter, right? Because the winner of the consolation there gets the first pick for next year. So I am trying to stay competitive for that purpose at the very least.
I don't know. Where am I placed in that league? I don't even know. I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't know either. We can probably look it up after the fact. We could talk about it offline. You might be number one. Blake might be number one in that league after this week. It's unconfirmed reports, but he might be.
Allegedly.
All right. On that note, let's get into some news and notes. And let's start with some updates from today. We got actually a whole bunch of stuff that happened in the games today. So Clayton Keller left the game tonight, did not return. Sounded like an upper body issue. So obviously, all these ones that we're getting that came in today as a result of the games today, you're not going to have any real details. Hopefully, we get something tomorrow on each of these. Maybe by the time you're listening to this, we've got something out already. So keep your eyes peeled. But Troy Terry did not suit up for the game tonight against the Preds. He did take a hard hit in the last game and left briefly. Maybe there's something correlated there. Brett Leeson drew into the lineup and kind of just drew straight into Troy Terry's spot, and he's got an assist in this game already, so good for you, Brett Leeson. But yes, obviously, Troy Terry, we don't know anything, like totally undisclosed what's going on, so keep your eyes peeled on that one. It's too bad, too, because Terry had been on absolute bender up to this point in the last few weeks here. Brian Rust, also an upper body injury in the game today. Also too bad because he had an absolute monster game in this crazy 7-6 win for Pittsburgh today. The hope is that he travels with the team on the upcoming road trip, but it sounds like they are going to do some tests and get some results before they announce that. Sean Monahan also missed the game tonight. That was an illness, so hopefully he's back and ready to go, but you'll have to check status there. Travis Konecny missed a second straight game. The Flyers had a back-to-back here Saturday, Sunday, so not all that surprising. If he was going to miss Saturday, they would also miss Sunday. But again, we need to have some sort of update on Konecny as well. And Joel Eriksson Ek, another one that's really tough to stomach with how hot he's been as of late, took an awkward hit into the boards on Saturday toward the end of the game. Says the coach there is saying, I don't know his name, Jay Hines. I don't know who he is.
Love but your ketchup.
He's saying he should be fine, but still questionable for next game at the moment. keeping right on rolling. Anthony Mantha, if you're in one of those deep leagues and you're looking at capital streamers with the schedule this week, Anthony Mantha injured and no word there yet on what that exactly looks like. So keep your eyes peeled. Maybe hold off on that ad if you're in your 16 or 18 teamers and you're looking at Anthony Mantha for this week. Joseph Woll has been getting some conditioning work in the AHL, but apparently there's nothing imminent for them to call up Woll. So still Ilya Samsonov time for the time being, but do note that Joseph Woll is on his way back. So if you got Samsonov and you need a volume option, maybe you want to be exploring some options on the waiver wire. Maybe not right away, but pretty soon. So keep your eyes peeled on that. Jake Guentzel traveling with the team, so that's good news for the Pittsburgh Penguins. He's not eligible to return until March 10th, however, so you still got a bit of time there before you're looking at a Jake Guentzel return to the lineup. And lastly, Matthew Tkachuk, day-to-day, should be good to go for the Panthers' next game on Tuesday, but yeah, one more to keep an eye on there. What is sticking out to you here, Blake? Which one of these is hurting you the most personally?
Well, they're all actually hurting me. It's the sheer volume of these players that I own. I mean, I got Tkachuk. I got, you know, Jeek. I got Konechny. I got Rust. I got Terry. What the hell? But hopefully, I mean, none of these sound crazy. So Brian Rust, I am a little bit concerned about, you know, but we'll see. I think Jeek's going to be fine. So as long as Jeek is fine and Tkachuk is fine, things are happy in Blake land.
Fair enough. Let's jump into the hot shots then. We are going to start with basically the top power play unit for Minnesota. At least all the forwards there, Kaprizov, Zuccarello, Joel Eriksson-Ek, and Matt Boldy. They're all crushing at the moment. Kaprizov's got 13.6 goals in his last five. Zuccarello has 10 points his last five. Joel Eriksson-Ek, 4 goals, 10 points his last 5. Matt Boldy, that absolute plug, only has 4 goals and 7 points in his last 5 games. So obviously things going right all of a sudden in Minnesota. Yeah, we could dig in on the stats. Suffice it to say, especially for Kaprizov and Boldy, the underlying stats look very, very good. Joel Eriksson-Ek a little bit behind that, but definitely along for the ride and more than holding his own. And then Zuccarello, you know, he's not a guy who's going to show up well in terms of the shots or anything. He's still 208th in shots per 60 in this stretch, but the on-ice stats look really good there for Zuccarello as well. I think overall, Minnesota as a team is playing much better as of late, but what do you think is really kind of driving all this production as of late? Is it just a PDO bender for the Wild, or do you think there's something more that we should be excited about for the rest of the season?
It's hard to say, but I mean, obviously the power play, right? Like, especially with guys like Zuccarello, like, yeah, he's just making bacon on the power play there. That really holds up the floor for Matt Zuccarello. He's a player that I called for last year as a bust. And I was surprised because he still got like a crap ton of points on the power play. And if you look at Zuccarello this year, he has 28 power play points in 49 games, right? He only had 29 all last year. But he's going to crush that. Like, so he's going to get his career high in power play points. No question there. Zuccarello is probably the one out of these four where you're like, it's not exactly sustainable per se, but like his access to that power play is going to keep him cooking here. He's on an 84 point pace, but yeah, putting that line together, that top line, Kaprizov, Boldy, and Jeek, that has been, you know, it's something that we called about or called for last year, tons of times early this year. Like, when are they going to put Boldy with Cap? Well, yeah, I'm so glad that they have because these guys are popping the hell off. And I mean, when you got guys like, it's just a perfectly set up line, isn't it, Nate? Like, Jeek is this defensive beast, you know, he's bringing the periffs, and Kaprizov and Boldy are just out there just flying. I mean, Boldy in particular, my God, it's not exactly like his statistics and underlying metrics are great, but when you watch the game too, it's like those plus the eye test and watching what Boldy's doing, like he looks electric out there and he's just absolutely engaged. So long story short, that these guys are cooking it, and I don't see it really going down anytime soon. I like to look at shooting percentage as well. Like, they're all shooting pretty much, yeah, close to 20% or over. I mean, Cap is shooting 29% over the last 5 games, but it's nothing super crazy. I mean, yeah, that's high and that's going to come down. But usually when I see something like, oh, he shot 48% over the last five games. Like, okay, that's coming down. But when you see someone shooting, like, you know, Joel Eriksson Ek, for instance, is shooting 23.5% over the last five, that might not come down that much, right? Like, it will come down, but it's nothing crazy. So they're obviously on a hot streak here, a bender, but I'm loving these guys. And you know what else I love about Minnesota? They're fighting for a playoff spot. So that means they're going to go all out to win. So all your top guys on Minnesota are going to be getting buku minutes out there in the most important times. You're not going to get any of this garbage like, benched because he, you know, missed an assignment or, you know, took a bad penalty. It's like, no, you're getting these players out there in all times because they need points and they need to win. So anyways, I'm super stoked on these players. I wanted to ask you, Nate, about Matt Boldy. What do you think he's approaching kind of superstar status? I know this is a player you've been really high on in the past. I'm high on him now, but where do you see him moving forward in terms of like just superstar status? Is he a supplementary guy here or does he kind of have his own gravity?
I think he definitely does. So he clears a lot of metrics that I look for, right? Last year, 10.2 shots per 60. This year, just over 10 shots per 60 on the season. But the individual scoring chances 4 per 60 have come up in a big way this year, and that's really exciting for me. So I'm really into that. The ice time, just over 18 minutes. In the last little bit, it's been higher, like 19 plus. So that gives them a little bit more juice as well. And then really what's exciting is the on-ice stuff this year has taken another huge step forward. Like, honestly, he's got better on-ice stats than Kaprizov on the season, which is pretty wild to say. But that's the part that's really got me excited about Boldy. The one thing that might hold him back in terms of like absolute superstar status, I thought we might see a kind of a more linear ascent in terms of the IPP. In his first year, 61%, last year, 64%. I thought he might take another step this year just in terms of like the share of the offense. And this year he's regressed back just a little bit, back down to 60%. So, you know, that could just be variance in a one season sample. You know, he very well could ascend to that. But in terms of projection moving forward, you would have liked to see him take another step this year in terms of the IPP and kind of feel like this is continuing to be a player who's commanding a greater share of the offense. Overall, still really excited about Boldy. I think he's got 90-point potential in the league at the very least. And I do think if he continues to grow from this point onward, then 100 points isn't out of the question. But I don't think he's trending towards like absolute superstar status, but definitely star status, like point per game plus, I think will be the expectation for Matt Boldy moving forward from this season, in my opinion. Kaprizov now on pace for over 100 points after the start that he had. Like, that's why you pay up for players like this, right? That's why you target these players when they're not doing well, is because at some point they score 13 points in five games and now all of a sudden everything looks right under the hood again. Actually, Kaprizov looks like he has more to give, to be quite honest. He's a little bit high maybe on the on-ice shooting percentage, maybe, but he's low on the IPP. He's like, this would be the lowest shooting percentage of his career, still on pace for 42 goals. On-ice numbers are better than they've ever been. I think that, yeah, you're just seeing that Kirill Kaprizov is absolutely a star in this league. And yeah, Joel Eriksson Ek is an interesting one for sure, because he's never quite attained to this kind of level where he's like pacing for 40 goals right on the season. He's never quite done something like that before. But I do think that he's got a lot of fantasy goodness to give, obviously, in terms of the peripherals. The shots per 60 come up a little bit this year again. Second straight year he's done that. Same for the individual scoring chances for, and just playing a lot more with offensive-minded players has really helped out his underlying numbers in a big way. And yeah, I mean, his previous high had been last season at 18:59 average time on ice, this year 20:35. So he's absolutely getting the snot skated out of him right now. And yeah, I'm here for it. I don't think that Boldy or Joel Eriksson Ek rather is the kind of guy who will absolutely dominate. Like, I do feel like this is kind of like a ceiling case for him in terms of the production outside of his one outlier year back in 2020-21, where he shot 15.8%. He's never shot better than 11.6% till this year at 13.1. So this does feel like kind of on the upper end of what is possible for him in terms of the efficiency and all of that, and in terms of the on-ice shooting percentage as well. But that's not to take anything away from Joel Eriksson Ek. It's just to kind of set some expectations on what we might think of him moving forward. I don't think he's more than this, and we should consider this as kind of a best case outcome for him, in my opinion. But yeah, overall, really happy with the Wild. Zuccarello is still kind of the odd man out there. I think he's going to have some good stretches here, and I think he's still like fringe viable as like a better than your waiver wire kind of player, but not by a whole lot. So that's where Zuccarello currently sits for me with this current configuration of the Wild lineup, but still having access to that power play and all these guys on that power play, that's still going to keep him up there for sure. So I'm generally okay with that as well, and continuing to roster him. I'm just kind of, yeah, lowering my expectations there somewhat.
Maybe you should raise them, Nate. This man got 4 assists. The zucchini man. Oh, yeah. Love zucchini. All right. Let's move on.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Maybe I should. All right. Let's move on. Let's talk about some Jared McCann. So Jared McCann has had a good stretch. Once again, there was a time during this season where we weren't so sure that we were going to have good Jared McCann kind of ever again, but right. He's got a good stretch, and it goes back a ways. If you start to pan back through his game log here, in the last number of games, like this has got to be, I'm not going to count out loud on the air here, but in the last like 12 to 15 games here, he's only got a couple games where he didn't register a point. Plenty of multi-point games here. He had a 4-point game earlier this week against your Vancouver Canucks.
Revenge game.
Yeah. And shooting a lot. Like he had a 6-shot game. Obviously the concern with McCann, like even through all of this, the highest ice time that you see is like not even 18 minutes a night. Yep. So you still got that concern where he's just going to have to be wildly efficient, which McCann is one of those players who you kind of feel can be wildly efficient. He has been wildly efficient in the past, including last year. So you feel like that's maybe a little bit more possible with him than some of these other players. But definitely it's hard to just have a ton of confidence in Jared McCann for the rest of the season, isn't it? Just given the situation there. What's your takeaway on McCann and this hot streak that he's been on?
It's great. I mean, I love when guys are performing like this, but yeah, there's just so many things that have to go right for McCann to really pop off like this, right? And he's on a 67-point pace or something like that. He was on a 73-point pace last season, so he's comparable, right? But yeah, wildly efficient, minimal, like he's averaging 16:30 time on ice for the season. That's not what I want to see, but obviously that's how they roll here. That's how Dave Haxtell rolls in Seattle, and that's fine, but I don't know. This guy, he's, as long as you didn't spend too much draft capital trying to get Jared McCann, this is one of those guys that's just like a boring fantasy piece that is going to do what he does and get you points, like, you know, 25 goals, 21 assists already on the season. That's nice. I don't even really have a feel for this player because I really stay away from Seattle players, and he's not even getting like his power play percentage, his power play share on the season is 48.7. That's bizarre. This is their best offensive player, and he's not even getting over 50% time on the power play. I mean, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense, but clearly a valuable player. I think Vince Dunn and Jared McCann are the players that you should have on Seattle, right? And I could see McCann going this way for the rest of the season, right? Cooking at this type of pace, maybe 70 points, 65, 70 points. That seems reasonable, but it's not sexy, right? And I don't know. Has anyone ever targeted Jared McCann in a fantasy hockey trade? Like, you know what? I think I want some Jared McCann. I think I want 16 minutes of Jared McCann on the regular. You take whoever you want from my team, buddy. I mean, I don't know. But do you have McCann anywhere, Nate?
I do have McCann in the Apples and Geos Patron League, actually, and I've been enjoying the fruits of his labor there. But yeah, I have the same kind of qualms about it, for sure. I'm going to hang on for now. Like, there's definitely no reason to move off right now. You know, if you can find a trade for Jerry McCann and find somebody who might be a little bit more stable, I'm valuing stability more and more, you know, as we're getting closer to the end of the season here. And as my teams are shaping up and I'm looking at buys and things like that, if I'm looking at a buy, then I'm really looking at what are my core players and how confident am I in them, you know, for those 2 weeks where it's going to matter. If I have a bye through the first round of the playoffs and I've got 2 weeks to really kind of hone in on what I want my team to look like, I want my team to look like guys that are going to be consistent and I can count on them. And I really just don't know if I can count on Jared McCann. So that's kind of where I'm at with him. Definitely enjoying the production, willing to ride it out, but I'm definitely not, you know, just absolutely smitten and thinking that there's no way nothing ever changes here. So keeping my eyes peeled on his deployment and all the rest of it there in Seattle. We alluded to this earlier, but Troy Terry, before missing this game here tonight, was absolutely kicking up a storm. And it's kind of interesting, right? Because he had 3 multi-point games in his last 5, and he also had 2 games where he had nothing, and literally only had 1 shot in one and 2 shots in the other. So he did kind of have a feast or famine approach here, but 2 3-point games and a 2-point game in that stretch. He had a 7-shot game in there. So he's definitely doing some stuff. The ice time is a little bit around, up and down and around, I guess I would say, between 1511 to 1803 in that 5-game stretch most recently. So it's not ideal, I will say, is the deployment recently for Troy Terry. You know, you'd kind of hope that with the Ducks the way they are and really not having anybody else, that they would just absolutely lean into Troy Terry, play him 21 minutes a night, and that would be it for the rest of the season. That's not been the case so far. And so that's given me a little bit of worry just in terms of, you know, assuming that the issue that I missed the game with tonight is a relatively minor issue and he's back relatively soon. I do have some concern just on the deployment alone. I'm not really concerned about the player. I think, like, quite honestly, Troy Terry deserves a medal for what he's doing for the Anaheim Ducks at the moment, just dragging the team along into semi-relevance. Maybe that's why he's missing the game. He's helping them out too much. They're trying to tank here, and he's doing too much for them. I don't know. But, yeah, I think the world of Troy Terry, the player, I think, you know, in a different market, like if he was the guy playing right wing with Panarin and Trocheck in the Big Apple, like everybody would know who Troy Terry is and he'd be on pace for like 90 points right now. So that's the kind of level of player I think Troy Terry is. I think he's just absolutely getting caved in Anaheim because that's what Anaheim does. So yeah, moving forward, I do have some concerns about Terry, but realistically, they're only deployment related. I do think that he's a great player and he can produce at a 70 plus point pace, even in Anaheim. What do you think, Blake? Am I a little too bullish on Terry or do you fall in line there?
Yeah, no way. I'm so with you. This is a player that I'm very in on, but I was in on him a lot more with the previous coach, right? Like things were trending upwards. Like you said, deployment, that is really the key here. Like it's all over the shop. And even his power play deployment, they're doing something stupid there, like which we talked about on Friday a little bit, but kind of a 1A, 1B situation where they're really splitting it up and Terry's on technically power play 2 a lot of times, right? Troy Terry, this guy is the best offensive player on your team. And, you know, yeah, put him on power play 2, Greg Cronin. I don't understand. Make it make sense, please. But yeah. 70-point pace, he's doing the thing. I'm big on the guy, but yeah, it's when you're getting these kind of minutes and you're all over like that and you don't have the power play. Like last game, for instance, like he only got 44 seconds time power play time on ice. Like 2 games before that, 54. Game before that, 48. Like he's not getting what he needs out there on the power play, and he's still producing, right? So that should throw up a little bit of a red flag for you. So I'm not as confident in Troy Terry as some of these statistics are showing. So I don't know. It's a player that should be rostered at this point, but he could be a bubble player. You know what I mean? Like depending, like with this type of situation that he's in, not the player himself, not the talent, but kind of just the situation he's in. I think you could justify moving on from Troy Terry if you really needed to, and you had a good add that you needed to make. Like Troy Terry is kind of a bubble guy, but I'm here for it. I hope he does crack 70, right? It's been an interesting season there in Anaheim. Remember when they were playing so well at the beginning of the year? Like Frank Vatrano, who, you know, we'll talk about a little bit, but he's still rostered at like 80%. What the Frank Vatrano, for God's sake.
Yeah, so why don't we jump in there? Frank Vatrano has been hot of late, as has Mason McTavish. So a couple guys that were going to come up here organically. Underlying numbers not so hot with either of these guys. I mean, Frank Vatrano's best number is he's 159th in shots per 60, and it kind of tails off after there. Mason McTavish, like, I don't even want to read these out. He's in the 300s in a couple of these. The on-ice stuff, not good whatsoever for either of these guys. McTavish, just 15 minutes a night, but he's still got 4 goals, 7 points in his last five as well, same as Vatrano. Vatrano is skating 18+, and, you know, he kills penalties there too, so he gets some extra ice time that way. But Vatrano, I mean, I would still have some interest in Vatrano. I'm not sure that I view him, you know, on the season he's pacing for 38 goals, 66 points. I still don't know that he's that guy rest of the season, but he is getting 18+ minutes a night pretty consistently, and that's more than you can say for a lot of other players there in Anaheim. So between the two, I'm definitely taking Vatrano. I think most people are. I don't think that's a hot take. But do you have any interest in McTavish just with the hot streak? Do you think that they can turn the hot streak into some more sustainable production, or do you think that, like, are you off on Vatrano too? Where's your head at with the rest of the players there, the guys that might more typically be rostered outside of Terry in some deeper leagues?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want a blanket statement like, you know, I'm not in on Anaheim players, but I'm not in on Anaheim players, you know what I mean? And it sucks because they have an amazing schedule. So I don't have Vatrano anywhere. I mean, I've streamed McTavish in here and there when it made sense, but these guys just aren't blowing the doors down. Vatrano is doing great things. Like, shout out to him. Like, this is a great season. He's definitely thrived under the new coach there. He's getting more deployment. He's getting the power play time that Troy Terry isn't, right? Frank the Tank Vatrano. I mean, you know, one thing we like about Frank Vatrano, he's a soggy boy. He does that, right? And he has throughout his career, even with crappy deployment. So it's nice to see that. I think you and I both projected Vatrano for a better season, right? Mostly in the goal scoring department, right? And he's definitely delivered that. But yeah, I don't like what's going on there with their power play. So I would put Vatrano and McTavish in the same basket as Troy Terry. Like, I'm not really in on any of those players because of what they're doing with their deployment and the power play. And McTavish, yeah, this is a nice little streak, but I don't know. Again, it's all on really high efficiency, and he's a young player. We don't even know if we can expect that from him moving forward. Like, he's, you know, he, in his first 9 games, he got almost 17% shooting percentage. He's at 15.5 this year, right? But he had 10.6 last year. So I still don't really know what type of player this guy is, and I don't trust it, right? And I like what you said earlier about wanting stability, right? I find that the more I play fantasy hockey, the more I find myself rostering really boring, stable fantasy guys, right? And McTavish, we just don't know what he is yet. So that all said, I'm not really in on any of these players, and I don't have them anywhere, and I don't want them, right? I'd rather just stick with something that I feel comfortable with and that I know.
Fair enough. Well, another player that, as some people were very uncomfortable with but have now reacclimated themselves, is Gabriel Vilardi, who's up to 4 goals, 8 points in his last five. He's definitely been doing the thing as of late. Actually, I want to make sure that this did update. I'm pretty sure it did. But yeah, Vilardi, another goal and an assist in the game today. Skated 19:43 in this last stretch. He's been averaging like 17 minutes, but that's been a trend up. So I'd definitely be a little bit more excited than that number might indicate. 16th in the league in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60 over this 5-game stretch, which is kind of Vilardi's calling card, right? Like, he's a guy who's around the net and he's banging at loose pucks, and he's been pretty good at putting them in this season. He's got a 17.4% shooting percentage. That feels a bit rich, but yeah, 36 goal pace, 67 point pace. Just take those numbers for what they are, Blake. Over or under rest of the season, you feel one way or the other about Vilardi?
I like where he's at, and I like his opportunity right now, and I like his deployment. So I don't know. I think this is a risk you can definitely take, right? Because it could really pay off. He's top line, top power play. And Rick Bowness is one of these like sensitive, touchy coaches where he'll say what he thinks of these players, right? Like he's talking smack on Cole Perfetti. He's talking smack on Ehlers. He's benching them, but he's not benching Velarde. He's not talking smack on Velarde and he's getting all the deployment. So that leads me to believe that he has the coach's trust right now. And the fact that he's got 10 points in his last five games, I think he's healthy too. Like he was injured and he's come back. And I really think that he feels good. He looks good out there. And I like the deployment. So this is a player that should definitely be on a roster right now. And I think, well, I mean, what is he pacing for? Oh God. 68 points. Yeah. I can see 65 points for Gabe Velarde, a 65 point pace rest of the season. With a little bit ceiling for more, but again, he's a really high efficient player. He gets a lot of his chances in tight, so obviously his shooting percentage is pretty high, but I like the player. He's up to shot count as well, so yeah. Long story short, give me some Gabe Velarde in my life until the wheels fall off.
Nice. All right, well, we definitely have to fit this player into our hot shots description. Ooh, yeah. It is Brandon Montour, who has finally delivered on all the promise we've been talking about this whole time. He's got 2 goals and 5 assists for 7 points in his last 5, actually in his last 4. So Montour's definitely been doing the thing. The hilarious part is that his metrics have actually decreased a little bit.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Latest stretch. They're still fine, but they're definitely not nearly as good as they have been throughout the season so far. Yeah, I mean, you know what I'm going to say about Montour before I say it. I feel like this is the guy that I think he is. I don't, you know, anticipate a point per game plus from this point onward. But I mean, the Panthers are looking really good right now in terms of the scoring up and down the lineup. They're getting points from all over. Montour is a fixture on the top power play. He's skating 24 plus minutes a night. Like he skated 28:45 the other night against Carolina. Absolute horse. He's going to be out there. He's going to be getting a lot of these points the rest of the season. Let me set it to you this way. Over under on 65 rest of season point pace for Brandon Montour.
Give me an even 65 on the full Monty. Oh God, it depends if he does the full Monty or a three-quarter Monty, but if full Monty, we're looking at a 65 point pace. Book it. All right. We are vindicated, Nate. This feels amazing. Watch this guy. He'll be a have not next week for sure. But yeah, kudos to everybody who held on to Brandon Montour. It just makes sense. And I love the fact that Paul Maurice didn't waver with his deployment of Brandon Montour. Like they obviously saw what the metrics are showing us too, right? Like this guy's getting a ton of chances, ton of shots. He's elite. He's, you know, he's playing a ton of minutes. He's good defensively. It's just a matter of time until the points start coming. And now we've got 7 points in 4 games. I love that. Yeah, I think I feel good about like a 60 to 65 point pace for Brandon Montour rest of season. They just look great. I love the Panthers. Like it's such a fun team because they underachieved in a lot of ways last year, just in terms of their conversion, especially at even strength. And Montour still had a 70 point season last year. So I'm just excited about this team. Guys like Sam Reinhardt popping the hell off like he is this year. I think Sam Bennett is going to have a nice little end towards the season here. He's starting to put some pucks on net, chucking pucks. And then, yeah, they've got a good bottom six here too. I really like what I see with the Panthers here. And Montour's he's leading the way on the back end. So shout out to you, Montour. Thank you for the full Monty, my man.
Absolutely. One thing I did want to touch on Montour, because I've brought it up in the past, just talking about like, you know, what you could have gotten instead of continuing to roster someone who's ice cold. The difference with Montour and a lot of other players that I would actually consider doing this for, like I talked about one example, I dropped Nick Ehlers early in the season this year when he was just mired down the lineup. And then he got up the lineup, you know, the Velarde injury happened and a few other things happened and he got up the lineup and everybody's like, oh, this is why you hang on to Nick Ehlers. And I was like, yeah, but I mean, he kind of tanked you for like 6 weeks first before he was any use to you. The difference with Montour, right, is that the deployment never wavered and the underlying stats never wavered. The signs were all there that the breakout was imminent. Yeah, it took a long time and yeah, you would have preferred that he wasn't on your team for all that time. But A, somebody else would have picked him up, so you would have lost him. And B, like that, this breakout that happened this week, it could have very easily happened like 4 weeks ago. In my mind, it's really just kind of luck at that point as to when the pucks start going in. And so that's the difference in my mind, is that when you have this marriage of the deployment still A plus deployment and the player is still performing at an A plus level in every arena that we can measure except for actual point production, then that's a player that I'm hanging on to kind of no matter what. And that's how I felt about Montour this entire time. All right. Before we move on to some have-nots, we got to take care of some business. If you've not made your way into the Apples and Geos Discord server, you absolutely need to do that. Check the link in the show description. Join over 1,000 fantasy hockey managers in there talking about fantasy hockey every day and every night. It's the place to be if you want to chat. Also, make sure that you're checking out Mark Barber, 18 Skaters on Twitter. Make sure that you're checking out his daily summaries posted to the Appleton Juniors website. Just a great spot to catch up on yesterday's games. If you weren't able to follow along religiously on your phone and check every box score and check how many shots and individual scoring chances for all your players got, you can do all that with Mark Barber's daily summaries. So make sure you're checking out those every single day to get a quick summary of what went on in the league last night. If you need some more help with your team heading into playoffs here, check out the Apples and Geos Patreon. $5 a month, you can get answers to all your questions from yours truly. For $10 a month, I'll give you a team review. We can sit down, go through your team in depth, think about what trades you might be able to make, think about what adds and drops you might be able to make, think about how to optimize for your playoff schedules, all the rest of it. We can do that together. And if any of this has been of value to you so far, if you're on YouTube, like and subscribe goes a long way to helping us out. If you're listening on audio, rating or review on whatever platform you're on would be stellar. Blake, you ready for some have-nots?
I can't wait, buddy. This is going to be super.
All right. Let's start with your Vancouver Canucks, Elias Lindholm. Lindholm has not exactly been what we thought he was going to be since the, the first game. Things were looking pretty good for Elias Lindholm. And then, the last five games, just one assist in the last five games has not been quite so hot for Elias Lindholm. So I'll kick it to you right away, Blake. What are you seeing with Lindholm? What do you have different expectations now than when he first came over? What are you thinking?
Yeah, it's just one of those things. And I've brought this up before in the past, but like, remember when Ryan O'Reilly came over to the Leafs last year and got a hat trick, and you're like, oh, this guy's going to pump goals. This is going to be amazing. Look at this player we got. He just needed a new environment. Like, no, I don't think that Lindholm is that type of player, to be honest. Like, yeah, he's got some goals, and he got two goals in his first game. He had another two goal game, but yeah, it's a brand new team. He's learning new systems, right? And he's trying to fit in with a pretty well-established team. So I think Lindholm's true value is actually in real hockey, like actual hockey, as opposed to fantasy, right? I'm not sure that we see him bump up like to previous career highs. Like he had an 82-point season in 2021, 64 points last year. Like I think the 82 points is the outlier. I don't think that Lindholm is this type of player. That said, he's super valuable, but like his conversion rates have slowly gone down. Like in his big year, he shot 18%, which is really nice. Then 12% last year. Now he's shooting 8.6% this season. And, you know, most of that was with the struggling Flames. I think that's just access to Johnny Huberdeau right there. You play on his line or on the power play. No, you're not getting any points for some reason. He's catching strays on the Apples and Geno's podcast here, but that's fine. That said, I think he is a little better than what he's shown here. Find a happy medium, right? I think we could see like a 60-point pace rest of the season for Elias Lindholm. He's going to be great on the power play. He's going to be great defensively, but I wouldn't expect that this guy is going to pop off on offense. They have guys that already do that, right? He's just going to supplement them where he needs. He reminds me of, if you remember the West Coast Express, I know it might be a little bit before your time, but he's like Brendan Morrison. Right. Mm-hmm. He's Brendan Morrison. He's playing with guys like Naslin and Bertuzzi. Let them do the work. This guy's there to be responsible defensively and, you know, chipping with the odd point. Plus, his floor is going to be super solid because he does have access to that power play. And he's been a good power play performer in the past. So, yeah, all that to say, again, 60-point pace, I think, is reasonable for this guy with maybe a touch more if he gets hot.
Yeah, it's kind of It's kind of a weird one for me with Lindholm. Like right now, he's not even playing with anybody of note. Connor Garland and Arshdeep Bains were his line mates in the last game. Mm-hmm. That's not where you want to be if you're Elias Lindholm at even strengths. He is still on the top power play. I feel like it's almost written in the stars that he has to be top power play and has to be in the top six for the vast majority of the rest of the season, if not all of it. He is still averaging over 20 minutes a game the last five games, so that part I'm not too worried about. The underlying numbers are just so bad right now. Yep. 320th in shots per 60, 351st in individual scoring chances for per 60. So like, this is a player that is really hard for me to recommend, but it's also kind of feels like a pretty good time to potentially scope out a trade if you are into Elias Lindholm. And the thing here is, I feel like this is just kind of like a really big boom bust play where it could go pretty wrong, because we've seen players, and anybody remember Timo Meier last year going to the Devils and how that worked out for the rest of the season. Everybody thought that would be gangbusters. It was not. That could be the situation here. It just doesn't work for whatever reason. You know, switching teams in season, not easy for different players for a variety of reasons. That could be the situation here, but the ceiling is so, so high, right? And playing alongside the stars that they have there in Vancouver, both at even strength and on the power play. So that part makes you super excited again about Elias Lindholm. And they do have a pretty solid playoff schedule, so that part gets you a little bit excited. I mean, I might kick tires on Elias Lindholm in a few places. I'm not going to go overboard and like sell the whole team for him, sell the farm for him. But if somebody out there is pretty panicked about Elias Lindholm, if they're scrapping to make the playoffs and I'm sitting pretty, then I am interested in potentially sending some sort of offer and see what I can get done for Elias Lindholm. Do you think you're going to be that bullish, Blake, or are you going to be maybe taking a little bit more of a hands-off approach?
Yeah, no, I love that. I mean, if it makes sense, this guy, he's certainly a buy low, right? Like this guy has had an 82 point season. And again, we just talked about Brandon Montour, like having that great deployment, and that never wavered. And I don't think that Lindholm's deployment is going to waver. And I also don't think he's going to stick with that line that he's on at even strength, but you know, his deployment is great. He's going to get 18 to 20 minutes a night because he plays shorthanded and he's going to get that power play time. So yeah, it is a boom or bust play, but the bust part isn't exactly a bust. It's just, you know, it's just uninspiring at the very worst. Yeah. You know what I mean? But they have a great playoff schedule. As you said, they have a bunch of off nights. So I like that as a buy low, because it doesn't feel like a league winning play. It's just a smart move that's going to get your team marginally better with a chance to make it a lot better.
Right. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Baby Dry. Rupe
Baby Dry.
One assist his last five games, just over 18 and a half minutes. The underlying metrics, pretty atrocious. 336th in shots per 60, 267th individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. On-ice numbers, not much better. 173rd in Corsi, 4 per 60, 157th in scoring chances, 4 per 60. On the season, pacing for 33 goals, 72 points. I definitely thought we'd see better from Rupe Hintz this year. I also didn't think he'd be averaging just 17-15 in terms of time on ice on the season. So that's definitely been lower than expected. And yeah, this is a guy who's been really efficient in the past. He's got just a 60% IPP, still shooting 18.7%, but that's because to get to 33 goals, he's had to shoot 18.7% because he hasn't shot a whole lot this year. It's not been a banner year for Rupe Hintz. And I'm curious what you think, Blake. Do you think that there's more coming? Obviously, the Stars have been able to rely on some secondary scoring a lot more this year. Do you think that's all there is to this, or do you think there's something else going on?
No, I think that's exactly what it is, right? Like they have an amazing second line, maybe the best second line in the league at this point. And they've been kind of eating into the power play time there as well for that top unit in Dallas, right? Like one of the things we loved about Rupe Hintz in the offseason was his IPP on the power play. Remember? It was like, yeah, he was just driving everything, right? And I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'm sure that might still be kind of true, but he's not getting as much power play time on ice, right? And like the numbers are way down. Like, I guess they're not that down. Like he had 21 last year. He's got 13 right now in 57 games. So that's maybe on the same pace, but the Dallas Stars don't have to rely solely on their top line, top power play anymore. They've got secondary scoring and great secondary scoring. So I don't know. all that to say, I mean, Hintz is still on a 72-point pace, which is great, right? But it's not what we expected. And I think that's going to piss a lot of fantasy managers off. And I also think that'll equal some value for Rupe Hintz come next season, right? Like, he hasn't done exactly what we thought he would do. Also, remember, he popped off in the playoffs last year. Like, this could have been your Conn Smythe winner if Dallas made it, or at least your points leader, yep. Right? He was going ballistic in the playoffs. So, I mean, I think Rupe Hintz is just a case of expectations gone wrong. Like, we expected too much. It's maybe not the type of player that he is. You know, the 75 points he got in 73 games last year, maybe that's kind of ceiling Rupe Hintz. And what we're looking at here, a 72-point pace, could be floor, right? But he's still a very dynamic player, very valuable player. I think we just wanted more, and he hasn't had to be out there doing everything because they've got some great secondary scoring.
Yeah, I think that's a fair take. I do think this is kind of a floor year for Hintz in a number of ways. Like, 18.7%, like, last year he shot 20.1, so it's not like this is out of the realm of possibility for what he's been able to do across his career. The IPP is kind of concerning. This would be, if this keeps up, this would be two straight years at around 60%, where before he'd been up in 70%, 67% in that range. So that definitely takes a bite out of your overall statistics. But the bigger thing I think that's happening this year is shots per 60 is down, his individual scoring chances 4 per 60 down in a big way, which is, yeah, along with a little bit less ice time, is really just contributing to the overall kind of muted production from Hintz in my mind. Now we've got Wyatt Johnston coming for his role. He's going to take over as the top line center. You heard it here first. Yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen, but
no, don't backtrack on it, Nate. We're in on that, and I'm with you. All right. This is Apple Dino's confirmed. We're taking Wyatt Johnston.
All right. Anyway, moving forward, like, I just don't have a reason to expect anything different from Hintz rest of season. And without that, I'm not like making any moves, based on something that I expect to happen differently rest of season. What we see kind of feels like what we're going to get in this current edition of the Dallas Stars. Let's check over on Trevor Moore. I know this was a player that a lot of people were very excited about early on in the season. He was scoring at like a 50-goal clip at one point, 50-goal pace. Now just one assist his last five games, still getting about 18 and a half minutes a night, which is about as good as you can possibly hope for on the Kings. 61st in shots per 60, 62nd in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. On-ice numbers not quite as good. 95th in Corsi 4 per 60, 125th in scoring chances, 4 per 60. Pacing for 31 goals, 54 points on the season. What's your current status on Trevor Moore? Is he now relegated to streamer status? Is he still above that for you? What's your take?
Oh God, I hope not. I have him in two spots and I don't want to drop him, damn it. This is a player to me that is shown out in the metrics that we love, right? But I think what I'm learning more and more about Trevor Moore as the season goes on, he's a chucker. All right. He chucks pucks. That's what he does. He doesn't necessarily do it in an efficient way. Right. And, that said, like, this year is his highest shooting percentage he's ever had, 11.7. And he's still 1 point in his last seven games. Right. Like, this is the kind of player we're looking at here. So I don't know. I think he's probably overachieving a little bit in his shooting percentage as well. So that could probably come down a little bit. So less goals for Moore. He's not getting very much power play time. He's moving down the lineup at times here, but this is a very good player. He's a very talented player. I like when he's going, this is a guy that shows out. He reminds me of Owen Tippett, right? Without, the hits and stuff like that. But, he has that kind of profile where he's just chucking pucks, tons of shots. But it doesn't necessarily equal production. So I don't know. I don't want to drop Trevor Moore, but I mean, yeah, if like we're getting close to playoff time here. So this guy's a bubble guy. If you need to get off Trevor Moore, by all means do that. Like, the Kings do have a 4-game schedule this week upcoming. So I wouldn't do it this week most likely, but yeah, it's not looking great for Moore, and I'm not sure that it's going to come back up, to be honest.
Yeah, I kind of feel like this is about what we should expect from him moving forward, somewhere in this range. His individual scoring chances 4 per 60 have legitimately come up this year, and he's maintained that kind of throughout the year. The shots have trailed off a little bit, so a little bit of the volume has gone away. But definitely this feels like a player who is in kind of a prime situation this season. I don't know if he's ever going to have as good a season as this season again, but in this current iteration of the Kings, same as we talked about hints in the current version of the Stars, I do feel like Moore is more or less this kind of like 31 goal, 54 point player. And so I think that's plenty valuable for fantasy purposes in most leagues. He's going to shoot and provide you a bunch of that. He throws some hits. He's not a big time hitter, but he throws some hits too. So he's valuable in some ways to you. And I just think that we probably got a little bit too ahead of ourselves in a lot of cases on who he might be. And he's definitely a player who I think has taken a good step this year in his current situation. I like to see that, but it's not a player that I ever got quite as excited about as a lot of other people. And this is kind of why, because even when he takes a step, it's still not, you know, like truly elite production. It's just another step along the way, and he can be a contributing member of a good fantasy team. All right, let's talk about some defensemen. So I want to kind of do a compare and contrast in some ways. You know, it's easy to put Kale McCarr in here. He's only got one assist his last five games, but I don't know if there's anybody in the entire planet who's actually legitimately worried about Kale McCarr. He's still on a 20 goal, 93 point pace on the season. Like, he's still 10th amongst all defensemen shots per 60, 7th in individual scoring chances for per 60. Like, I don't know if there's anybody out there who's actually worried about Kale McCarr. I'm certainly not. But there are a bunch of other guys who people have been like pretty excited about, I would say, at various points throughout the season. And I think it's going to be a little bit of an interesting exercise. So let's go through it. I've got five names here.
Oh my
God. And I think that they all fall into a relatively similar spot for me. And I want to see if we can do a little bit of a mini ranking here. But I've got Seth Jones, I've got Brock Faber, I've got Luke Hughes, I've got Brent Burns, and I've got Jacob Chychrun. So of these guys, I guess I would have to say, like, Seth Jones right now is the best individual underlying metrics, like 9th in shots per 60, 9th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60, while skating 28 minutes a night for Chicago right now. Yeah. He's got only 2 assists to show for it, but that's kind of Chicago for you, right? And so, you know, if you're just going off the metrics, maybe you'd love Seth Jones, but then you think about the situation there, and it's reflected a little bit in the on-ice stats. Even though his stats are so good, the on-ice stats are still pretty pedestrian. 50th in Corsi 4 per 60, 63rd in scoring chances 4 per 60, and on the season they're even worse. So you got Seth Jones there. Then the guy in the best situation is also the guy with the worst metrics. You got Brock Faber, who's got only one assist in his last five games, in stark contrast to all the other members of the Wild who we mentioned in the hot shots earlier, those forwards. Similarly, skating tons of minutes, 26 plus minutes a night in the last five games, but 162nd amongst defensemen in shots per 60. That's got to be like actually almost one of the worst marks in the entire league.
Yeah. Is there that many defensemen? Is that?
Yeah. 49th in individual scoring chances, 4 per 60. So that's better, but it's nothing to write home about. 86th in Corsi, 4 per 60. 30th in scoring chances, 4 per 60 is Brock Faber. And then, you know, you got Luke Hughes. It's kind of similar in some ways to Faber in terms of good situation you might get excited about, skating 23 minutes a night. On ice numbers terrific for Hughes, 4th in Corsi 4 per 60, 3rd in scoring chances 4 per 60 last five games, but the individual stats are not great. Similar for Brent Burns, his shots have kind of gone away, but he's still like taking shot attempts. He's 10th in Corsi 4 per 60, but 125th in shots per 60, so he's just not hitting the net. On ice numbers pretty good there. And then Jacob Chychrun still continuing to have really solid numbers kind of across the board, but only one goal, no assist to show for it his last five games. And we know Ottawa's had their struggles since Jacques Martin took over there. So now that we've kind of gone through a little bit of the statistical profiles the last little bit, I've given you some time to think, Blake. Can you give me some sort of ranking on these guys for the rest of the season and help our listeners out?
Oh, God. Okay. Well, did you throw Kale McCarr in there? Because I'll take Kale McCarr at one.
Yeah.
Oh, God. All right. Let's take a look here. So of these five guys, let's see. I think Jacob Chychrun is probably the guy I like the most at the top. And I know he's not getting amazing. Like, this is an upside play to me. Obviously, he's getting power play two there in Ottawa. And I think that Chychrun is like an elite stash, because I think he might get moved here at the deadline. But doesn't mean he's going to get moved to a team where they do prioritize him and give him power play one. But I do like Chychrun's profile. I know he's not doing well currently here, but I'd probably go Chychrun first, maybe Brent Burns second, just because of his situation, right? And like you said, the shot attempts there, he's still getting buku minutes, getting power play time. You know, he has 16 power play points on the season. That's nice. He'll get double digit goals this year. That's nice. So I'll go Chychrun, Brent Burns. Then, this is where it gets a little dicey for me. I probably put Faber in there, even though he's not getting amazing metrics, but I love the deployment. And I know it's come down a little bit lately, but I think that he is just a little bit unlucky in the fact that he's not, you know, getting in on some of these goals. Yeah, his metrics are terrible, and we can't really expect him to you know, produce at the level that maybe Chychrun or Brent Burns can, but he's out there for like 25 minutes a night, sometimes 30 minutes a night. Right. And these guys are incendiary on the Wild, and they have a ton to play for. So I just like the situation there for Faber. So it's more of a situation type play that I think will run into some points. Then I'd go Seth Jones. He's looking good to me, actually. Like, he had a nice little game here. I mean, he's only on a 34 point pace, but this game here today against Detroit, you know, got one assist, six shots on goal, got four blocks. This guy's, he's crushing 26 and a half minutes. Like, the only reason he's on a 34 point pace is because he plays for the Blackhawks. You know, that's it, right? It's just a crappy place to play for fantasy hockey, right? But I do like Seth Jones. And then Luke Hughes, to me, he's borderline drop. I mean, I would have dropped him a little while ago, but he's popped a couple assists for me, and he's still getting power play one. Oh God. It's like, I can't, but you know, the Devils have been, you know, pretty bad lately. I mean, they're not getting the job done. So it's, I don't know. That's my initial take there. I don't know. Where are you at with these players, Nate? How would you rank them?
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's definitely not one that I would want to rank, but I will obviously here. I agree with Burns and Chychrun at the top. I might flip-flop. I might have Burns over Chychrun, but honestly, I could see it either way. I just think Burns probably has a little bit more ceiling if he gets hot at the right time with the top power play with Carolina there. So I'd probably go Burns and Chychrun if I had to. And then, yeah, it really does become kind of another tier between Faber and Jones, mini tier there. I might take Seth Jones, honestly. Like, Faber has not been good. He might be hitting a bit of a wall. He's played an incredible amount of hockey for the Minnesota Wild this year. It is his rookie year, you know, coming from NCAA where they don't play a ton of games. He might just be hitting the wall, and that would be completely understandable for a player in his situation. I kind of feel like I'd take Seth Jones, honestly, over Brock Faber, especially, I mean, if you got any kind of bangers weight in your point setup, or if it's a bangers cats, then Seth Jones obviously gets that boost as well. So that would make the decision potentially easier there. And then, yeah, I'd throw Luke Hughes at the end. Like, Luke Hughes, like, pacing for 11 goals, 41 points on the season. This is a really good rookie season for a defenseman in the league. Obviously, he's got a terrific future. But I think from what we've seen from Luke Hughes over the last maybe couple months or so, like, if Dougie Hamilton was back, Dougie Hamilton would have taken this job back, in my opinion, especially with some of the struggles that the Devils have had. I do think that we're just kind of in a situation where Luke Hughes is kind of all they got. And so he's the one that they've been running out there, and he's going to get, he's going to score maybe at a 41 point pace rest of season, just because of how incredible the situation is that he finds himself in for fantasy purposes. But overall, I do think that he's the one that's least likely to return fantasy value for the rest of the season. So interesting exercise, for sure. And I think that some people probably have some different opinions on those players. So I think it was a good one to talk through. That's going to be it for Have Nots. But if we didn't talk about a player that you do want to hear about, make sure to join me for Monday's 8 p.m. EST live stream, Puzzling Players. If you get into the Appleton Geos Discord server, you will get a ping from me where I ask for the Puzzling Players for this week from the Discord server. Everybody chimes in and votes for the players they want to hear about the most. And the players that get the most votes get talked about on the Puzzling Players live stream. It's funny how that works. So definitely join me 8 p.m. EST live stream every Monday. I talk through some Puzzling Players, and you can get yours in. All right, let's get under the hood with Shane Pinto, who is my player to watch for this week here. Last 10 games have been pretty solid for Shane Pinto. 3 goals, 5 assists, 8 points, averaging over 18 minutes a night, 18-19 to be exact. 39th in the league in shots per 60, 16th in individual scoring chances 4 per 60, 38th in on-ice Corsi 4 per 60, 17th in on-ice scoring chances 4 per 60. Good numbers, really, really good numbers for Shane Pinto. And it's a 10-game stretch. You know, it's still a small sample size in the grand scheme of things, but it means something, you know, when a player can sustain it for at least that long in my eyes. Still top power play, at least on the Brady unit. I know they've been playing around with those power play units, but basically wherever Brady Tkachuk is what I would consider to be the top power play unit. Pinto's still there, and he's attached to Brady at 5v5. He's been playing with Brady Tkachuk at 5v5 for a good minute now, and seems to be working out okay. I'm just kind of into this profile a little bit. It seems like he's taken a clear step this year. He's come back. You know, he obviously had that crazy start where he got suspended for a long time for that kind of super weird gambling thing that I still don't fully understand. Yeah. But he came back and he had something to prove, and he's done that so far in my eyes, or at least he's gone a long way towards doing that. And yeah, the Senators might have found themselves a little player here, and I'm pretty into Shane Pinto at the moment, especially in deeper formats. I'm trying to find a way to keep him on my roster. I've got him in a couple, hanging on there unless I absolutely have to get rid of him, because I do think that this is a player who's exhibited something that we should be taking note of at this point. What's your thoughts on Pinto there, Blake?
Well, first off, it's the Pinto Bean! Yeah! I love the Pinto Bean. I'm a big fan. I love what I've seen from this player, exactly what you described. And I love the deployment. Yeah, with that, you know, quote-unquote first power play unit. Yeah, with Brady. I think until if he gets off that first power play unit, maybe I'm a little less excited, but this week coming up is a great time to roster Shane Pinto, right? They got 4 games, 2 off nights. They got the back-to-back Monday, Tuesday. Let's get the biz with the Pinto Bean and see what's what. I think this guy's super motivated. Obviously, he's rested. Okay, you know, he probably feels good out there. So I think we could be in for a big end to the season for Shane Pinto as long as he keeps this deployment. So it is neat to see, though, that, yeah, he's rocking with the metrics here as well.
Absolutely. Why don't we roll on over to the move of the week? Can you take us away, Blake?
Yeah, sure, buddy. Yeah, I had a very interesting week here. The one league that I wouldn't say I'm struggling in, but it's the first time I've ever done a full bangers league. And it's also a 16 teamer. So we're talking penalty minutes, like all kinds of crazy stuff. Right. And I'm 9th out of 16 and the top 8 make the playoffs. So yeah, I'm trying to get to work here, but anyways, there's also a move cap, right? So there's 75 moves on the season. I've used them up already. All right. So that's poor management there on my part. But, you know, there shouldn't be a cap, first off. So, you know, that's fine. But anyways, I had the Carolina goalies as my tandem. So I had Kochetkov and Ranta. Obviously, Ranta's injured. And I wasn't making the goalie minimum of 3 games with Kochetkov, right? Because Spencer Martin's been getting in there. So I had to do something. This week, I was dominating the guy in a lot of statistics. And Kochetkov came out and got this 44-game shutout. So shutouts is one of the categories. Like I'm crushing in the goalie stats. I needed another goalie to get my minimum because I didn't want to lose those points or those categories. So anyways, I was able to trade straight up Tim Stützle for Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen, which sounds terrible. That does sound terrible, but in my defense, they were ranked in this format. UPL, when I traded for him, was 60th overall. Tim Stützle was 112th. So in the format, right? So to me, like, I think it seems like an L for me, but because of the rank, like I was able to get a player that is providing more value in this format. And that just goes to like something I talk about on the Cream Exchange, the Buy Low Sell High show, is perceived value versus actual value. Right. So it really pays to know your format and to take advantage where you can. Right. And like this, it was a bit of a Hail Mary for me, but when he accepted the trade, I was like, oh wow, this is awesome. And then I felt kind of scared because I was like, Timmy Stutz for UPL? Who the hell in their right mind would do this? But, you know, I was able to get UPL in and he's won 2 games for me. And I was able to take all the goalie stats because of UPL and Kochetkov having a decent week. So, and I ended up winning that matchup. So that's, I don't know. I just think know your format and definitely just tinker and like use that big name value. Stützle is a big name, but he wasn't ranked as high as UPL for some reason in this format. So there you go.
All right. Well, I commend your winning your week. I don't know that I would commend the trade for UPL specifically, but
oh my god, you just all right. That's fine.
You know me. If you're gonna talk about trading for a goalie on podcast, Blake, you have to know what's coming next.
All right. Yeah, I had it coming.
Anyway, for myself, I had an interesting situation. So I was streaming Ivan Provorov and Jack Roslovic. I never know how to say
bless
his
you.
Name. In Kakuffle this week with one ad left. I was 21 points up going into today's games, projected to win by only 10. He had more games played today than me. The obvious drop would have been Pinto, who was not playing today. But Pinto starts, you know, next week, Monday, Tuesday, back-to-back. I can fit him in for both games. And so I was looking at what I should do with this last ad. In the end, I decided to drop Provorov for James Reimer. Just felt like a really solid scenario where I could actually get more value out of, you know, obviously for a single game, goalies are probably going to outscore any given defenseman in a points league, right? Provorov actually ended up scoring a goal, so he got 6.5 kickoffle points, but Reimer did deliver. He got 9.9 kickoffle points with the goal to, or with the win rather, two goals against, 33 saves. So in the end, it was, you know, a minor move in the grand scheme of things. You could argue whether I really should have even made that move just based on the percentages of how likely it was to influence the matchup. But I wasn't feeling too strongly about, you know, Provorov in general. Like, I don't know who could have possibly predicted
worst
him.
Worst haircut in the league, Nate. Oh, my right? God. You've seen this man's hair? Damn. Get a comb, buddy. What are you doing?
But anyway, that was a move that I made this week. So it's probably one of the riskier moves, and I'm still honestly not even completely sure how I feel about it. It did obviously end up netting me more points for this week, points that in the end I didn't even need because the rest of my team came through in a big way and I kind of ended up crushing. But it's an interesting one to think through nonetheless, and one that I think a lot of people do have to think through. And I think part of it probably comes back to, you know, how badly do you need this win? In this case, you know, if I lost this week, I was probably going to lose my bye spot. I'm currently sitting second in my Kakuffle division. If I lost this week, that could be in jeopardy depending on how the points played out and everything. I'm sitting tied with another manager currently. So that was just another situation where I was like, I really feel like I need to do what I can to assure this, but I'm not willing to drop a player who I actually feel like can be a legitimate producer for me rest of season and kind of jeopardize potential future matchups for it. So this was kind of the middle ground that I settled on there. So take that for what you will. I still, like I said, not 100% sure how even I feel about it, but that was the move I made this week. And I think it was just an interesting thought process for some people to go through. All right, Blake, we do need to recap the head-to-head streamer death match. Boone Jenner versus JJ Paterka. We all knew how this story was going to go when the selections were made, but Boone Jenner did outscore JJ Paterka, 24.75 Kakuffle points to JJ Paterka's 9.5. Paterka played 12:56 today with zero Kakuffle points.
Doesn't matter.
It was not a great finish to the week, but to be honest, I didn't mind the Paterka stream last week for sure, just given the schedules and everything. He did still take 12 shots on the week, 12 shots through the first three games even, so he definitely did some stuff. He just didn't quite get on the score sheet in the way that we know a man like Boone Jenner can. This week upcoming, we've got, what I should say is that means that we are now tied once again, Blake. It's 9-9. We're coming down to the wire and just trading blows back and forth. You know, I feel like we're boxers in the ring. We've been going 18 rounds and we're still staggering around, just one blow landing after the other, passing it back and forth. But this week we got my Dylan Strome and your Wyatt Johnston. If this was 2024, 2025, when Wyatt Johnston is the Dallas Stars 1C, maybe you'd feel a little better about this, but regardless, we'll see how it goes this week. I'm excited. This has been a fun mini game for us all year long, and we'll see how it goes. Anything to say for yourself, Blake, before we sign off here?
Yeah, buddy, you know, I have to make these mistakes, otherwise I'll never learn, all right? And then that's what this is all about, my personal development, all right? Boone, I'm sorry, buddy, all right? I'll never do it again, Okay. That's all I have to say about that.
All right. And that's all we've got for this episode. Hopefully it brought you some value. Hope you get a little bit better at fantasy hockey today. All the advanced stats you heard today came from Natural Stat Trick, which is a terrific free resource. Many thanks to the band there for supplying the music for the podcast. Be sure to check out their Spotify as well. And that's it, folks. Much love.